Today, friends, Easter falls on April Fool's Day. And this is a day that came into being when the calendar was switched from the Gregorian calendar to the Julian calendar. And so everything was changed on how the dating worked. But for those who refused to acknowledge when the new year was supposed to be, or for those who certainly just maybe didn't even understand it, they became known as April Fools. And yet for us today as we gather, there's not another doctrine of our faith that is more vital to us than the resurrection of Jesus Christ. This is the doctrine that our faith stands or falls upon. If Jesus is still dead, then we're the April Fools. But if Jesus is alive, then we have all that we know that we need in him alone. I thought about this idea of fools, and I'm a kid that grew up in the 70s and 80s, and so one of my childhood heroes, don't judge me too much, is Mr. T. And Mr. T taught me that you're supposed to pity the fool. And one thing the Easter resurrection teaches us is that if you believe in death, that it is so final, that God can have no answer to that, that makes you the fool. But just so you understand that Mr. T agrees with me, because he is a Christian guy, here's Mr. T being interviewed by Conan as he shares a bit about the gospel.
You coined one of the most famous catchphrases in history, I pity the fool.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is I read an article with you once where you said that when you pity the fool, you consider that an act of kindness to
people. Oh, yes.
I always took it as that pity the fool means I want to kill the guy.
No. When you pity somebody, you're showing them mercy. Because I didn't start this pity stuff. It was in the Bible. You know, you find pity so many times in the Bible and fool so many times. So I put them together. Pity the fool. Because a lot of guys in the Bible was asking for pity.
Yeah.
You know, and then a lot of them were saying I did a foolish act.
Right.
So I put it together.
I didn't realize you did all this research before you came up with I pity the fool.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you have trademarked the phrase.
Uh-huh.
Is this right, Mr. T? You trademarked the phrase,
exactly.
I pity the fool.
Exactly.
So what happens if someone uses that in a commercial?
Oh, man. Oh, my people are going to be on them. Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's part of Mr. T retirement fund.
Right. That's when T comes, stands for take you to court.
Oh, yeah. My attorneys be waiting. They be waiting on fools to do something like that.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So if someone else says, if you saw me and I did a commercial and I went, I pity the fool that doesn't eat Cocoa Puffs, what would happen to me?
No, I wouldn't, you know, because we buddies. I would call you up. Say, hey, Conan.
Yeah.
You know, I figure me and you can work it out before we go to court.
All right.
When the women arrived at the tomb, they wanted to know where Jesus' body was taken. They were fooled into thinking it was a robbery. When they went to the disciples and told them that Jesus was risen, the disciples were fooled into thinking it was a bunch of nonsense. On the road to Emmaus, Jesus walked for 2 hours, 7 miles, with two of his disciples. And the whole time they're walking, they didn't know who he was. They were fooled into thinking that these mysteries that are out there, there was no explanation. And it wasn't until they were at the table and Jesus broke bread with them, maybe it was the way he prayed or he broke the bread, that they discovered that Jesus was in fact alive. When the soldiers went into town and lied about what had happened, the people there were fooled into thinking Jesus' body was stolen. Mary had a conversation with Jesus, but she was fooled into thinking he was a gardener. Maybe he was playing with the flowers or doing something like that. There's a part of me that likes to think Jesus was playing in the dirt and then suddenly turned around and said, April Fools, the joke's on you. No matter what, we know that Christ is risen. And the resurrection was really a joke on all of the crucifiers. Those who thought that Jesus was dead and he would be out of their way and they could go back to the way that things were. But the joke was on them, the idea that Jesus could stay dead. There's a Chinese theologian, Watchman Nee, who said, our old history, it ends with the cross. And our new history begins with the resurrection. It's probably most true for any of you that have lost someone that you have loved. Because the world is full of religious leaders who have died and they're buried. Today, you can go visit the burial site of Muhammad. And for many people, this is a high and religious experience for them. Or you can go visit the tomb of Buddha. And there are Buddhist followers who come from around the world and visit these graves. Even in our own country, there's past presidents and historical figures that have famous graves that you can go visit and people can have their religious experience. But we don't gather here today for a religious experience. We gather asking the Word of God to give us answers to life's biggest questions. And there's one thing I know. If you go to Jerusalem and you go visit one of the holy sites that claims to be Jesus' empty tomb, there is one thing for sure. His tomb is empty. It's Tomb Fool's Day. To affirm the bodily resurrection of Jesus is to affirm the bodily resurrection of all people in Christ. When we say Christ is risen, we are saying my grandparents are risen. When we say Christ is risen, we're saying that my aunt and uncle are risen too. Or when I think about the people at peace that I have served now for the last few years, to say Christ is risen is to say that Cal Setter is risen. And Billy and Cher and Dorothy and Laird and Robert and Eleanor and Russell and KB and Wanda and Ed Mitchell and many others that I can't even name now, that they are risen. When you think of the one that you gave to the Lord and you entrusted them to the Lord's care, when you say Christ is risen, you're saying that they're risen too. And I've seen it in people's eyes. I can see it sometimes. You can sense it even when they come to the communion rail. Sometimes there's obvious tears, but other times there's just a sense of sorrow that's over them. And we as your pastors know that you're grieving. And I'm here to tell you that when we declare that Christ is risen, we are saying something about all those people that we give to the Lord. Because you can get all pomp and circumstance about worship. We can think about the music that we have that's so glorious. But the question we ask is, God, will you give me back my child? Will you give me back my mom or my friend? That's the only thing we want to know. Because death takes everything from us. And then this is the thing. Resurrection announces that whatever the way things seem to be, whatever ways that death and destruction and despair tried to steal everything from us, they will not have the last word. Lee Strobel writes that Christ did not come into this world to make bad people good. That's religion. He came into this world to make dead people live. The Jewish people tell the story of Elisha the prophet. Elisha was a traveling prophet and really didn't have a place to lay his head. But there was one rich woman who was so moved by his message that she invited Elisha to come and stay with her. She even built an addition onto her house. And Elisha was so touched by her generosity, one day he went to the woman and he said, "You're going to have a son within the next year." This is a woman who had been barren and who had an elderly husband. Sometimes I wonder if he even asked God beforehand if he was allowed to do this miracle, or if God was like afterwards, like, "Elisha, come here. You got to stop doing that, dude." But sure enough, the woman had a child. And we know that the child grew and grew and ended up working in the fields with his father, helping his father was elderly. And then one day, he seems to have something like a brain aneurysm because he started to shout out that his head was hurting. When they brought the child to his mother, he finally died in her arms. And she's brokenhearted. How could this miracle come upon her? And then suddenly she's lost everything. She doesn't know what to do. But she takes the child into the prophet's room and lays him on the prophet's bed and then goes out to find him. When Elisha finds out, he's brokenhearted too, and he sends his disciple who's younger and faster, and he gives him his staff. He's got this magic staff with him, and he says, "Run ahead and go lay this on the child." And the disciple does this, lays it on the child's chest, but then nothing happens. Again, Elisha finds out, and now he's ready to run there, and the mom lets him know, "I don't care how fast you run, I'm keeping up with you, because that's my boy. And I have been celebrating this God that you serve, and I have been taking care of you. But God needs to answer for this, because this is where my faith meets everything." And so sure enough, Elisha makes it. He lays himself on the boy, and the Bible's very specific. He lays eye to eye and mouth to mouth and hand to hand. And Elisha's just making a point to God, like, I need to give this life to him. He does it again another time, and the boy comes back to life, and he's able to give this child back to the mom. This isn't even the most amazing story of Elisha's career as a prophet. Even after he dies and he's in his tomb, there's a story later on that the Jewish people tell. And they're at a funeral, and they're preparing to bury somebody into the same grave, and then suddenly these raiders come in. And they don't know what to do, and so they just kind of dump the body into Elisha's grave. And the corpse touches Elisha's corpse, and that one comes back to life. This is the most amazing part of Jesus' story as well. He had best friends a lot like Elisha did. He had a place to stay, and it was in Bethany, all during Holy Week. He could have been spending his time in Jerusalem, and he did to teach, but that's not where he wanted to rest at night. He went back to Bethany, to his friend's house, where Mary and Martha and Lazarus lived. I guess he liked Martha's cooking. There was another time, though, when Jesus wasn't there, and their brother Lazarus passed away. And the girls were hurt, because if Jesus had been there, this could have never happened. Because they knew that faith in Jesus is great, but it only matters if he can do something about death. And of course, when he showed up, he did something about death. He called Lazarus out of the tomb. And this is the key question for all of us this Easter. And it comes from John 11. This is where Jesus tells us, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. And then he asks this question of you. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Because Jesus is God's way of refusing to give up on this world. Maybe you wonder what kind of future that God has for you. He makes it very clear at the very end of the Bible in the book of Revelation, he plans a future with no more death, no more mourning or crying, and no more pain. A life where Christ makes all things new, including you. Christ is risen.